I'll flash a spark. Let's take a picture of a waterfall.
This is WGXC Acra, 90.7 on your dial. Also online at wavefarm.org/WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Devon of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Podcasts get made locally at wgxc.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at wgxc.org.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information.
helping my friends during the pandemic. One, two, three!
The light comes streaming in through my window. You leave all chance to breathe, but I'm just stuck in my head all day long. I can't go and do what I crave. Yeah, I could fake time or do homework online, but I'm just in the same. I wanna see my friends and play with my band. I wanna eat dinner at my grandma's place. Here I sit in my house feeling so blue. I'm missing you. I see the birds fly outside my window. I see the squirrels never by.
Listening to There There on WGXC, Radio for Open Ears, 90.7 FM, Acre, also broadcasting in Hudson and Catskill and around the Upper Hudson Valley, and all around the world online at WGXC.org. I'm Alana, your host. This is There There. We're on until 8 o'clock tonight and on the fourth Sunday of every month from 7 to 8. We just heard Teen Sensations, teen and preteen, I should say, Sensations, the Linda Lindas, my new favorite band. They've been having a bit of a moment on the interwebs. That was Missing You, performed at the Teen-tastic Tuesdays at the LA Public Library earlier this month. They're a band from LA. I think the members range in age from 10 to 16, I think, 15, something like that. Anyway, they're just slaying. They're amazing. And their song, Racist Sexist Boys, is definitely having a moment. It's a hit, so check it out. Before that, we heard the Chicago Bucket Boys performing live on the street in Detroit back in 2014. They also perform for sports teams now, so they've kind of made it to the big leagues. And if I didn't say before, I'm Alana, your host. Thanks for tuning in this evening, and up next we have Poet Laureate Joy Harjo.
So we were getting ready to leave south, and the Tennessee River, which was a major roadway for people up through there, and I felt strange because we had come to the homeland, and we weren't there, but then we were there, and now we were leaving a place that people fought so hard. You know, my grandfather Manahui fought in the Battle of Horseshoe Bend against the illegal move. I mean, people laid their lives down to stay home. And here we were going to go back. And I thought, what do I do with this? And the last thing I had time to do is write a book of poetry. That was last on my list. And I had all this work. One, and then a strange thing, there were three poets in the program. One retired, one died suddenly, and then there was me with all the PhD and MFA students, etc. And I was thinking, we're gonna leave, and what am I gonna... Then the book started coming. This is the first poem of this. It's called How to Write a Poem in a Time of War, because I looked out into these beautiful lands, and I thought, how am I going to write this story? Where do you start? And you know, in poets' research, most people don't know that, but they think we're just these crazy people that get an idea and write it down, and there it is. But there's a lot of work that goes. There's a lot of crafting. I even start revising stuff or shifting because I hear something that still not needs tucked in a little bit. And so this is the first line. There's actually two voices in this poem. It's called How to Write a Poem in a Time of War. And there's two voices, you know, one is kind of observing and one is speaking. And like any poem, I don't know where I'm going. If I do, I can't write it. And I learned something. I learned something. And this one, I was surprised by what I learned. You can't begin just anywhere. It's a wreck. Shrapnel in the eye of a house, a row of houses. There's a rat scrambling from light with fleshy trash in its mouth, a baby strapped to its mother's back, cut loose. Soldiers crawl the city, the river, the town, the village, the bedroom, our kitchen. They eat everything or burn it. They kill what they cannot take. They rape what they cannot kill. They take. Rumors fall like rain, like bombs, like mother and father tears swallowed for restless peace, like sunset slanting toward a moonless midnight, like a train blown free of its destination, like a seed fallen where there is no chance of trees or any place for birds to live. No, start here. Deer peer from the edge of the woods. We used to see woodpeckers the size of the sun and were greeted by chickadees with their good morning songs. We'd started to cook outside, slippery with dew and laughter. Ah, these smoky, sweet sunrises. We tried to pretend war wasn't going to happen, though they began building their houses all around us and demanding more. No, not here. You can begin here. This is memory shredded because it is impossible to hold with words, even poetry. These memories were left here with the trees. The torn pocket of your daughter's hand-sewn dress, the sash, the lace, the baby's delicately beaded moccasin still connected to the foot, a young man's note of promise to his beloved. No, this is not the best place to begin. Everyone was asleep. Despite the distant bombs, terror had become the familiar stranger. Our beloved twin girls curled up in their nightgowns next to their father and me. If we begin here, none of us will make it to the end of the poem. Someone has to make it out alive, sang a grandfather to his grandson, his granddaughter, as he blew his most powerful song into the hearts of the children. Chihoto Chazari Jina Flakari Momais Komet. There. It would be hidden from the soldiers who would take their miles, rivers, mountains from the naval court place of the origin story. He knew one day, far day, the grandchildren would return generations later over slick highways constructed over old trails through walls of laws meant to hamper or destroy, over stones bearing libraries of the winds. He sang us back to our home place from which we were stolen in these smoky hills. Ah, Watchkin, oh, 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 pay. Yakathlis, holwen. Yes, begin here.
must excuse all this tuning because the guitar is brand new and it's really tough being born, you know. It really is. You have a hard time, you know, yeah. Because the guitar has to adjust to shapes. It came from New York, Rhode Island, straight to Canada. It's going through changes. Just yesterday morning, he let me know you were gone. Susan, the plans we made were meant to you. Walked out this morning, and I wrote down this song. Now I just don't remember who to send it to. Oh, I've seen fire and dancing rain. I've seen sunny skies that I thought would never end. Lonely times when I could not find my friends. But I always knew that I would see you again. Always knew that I would see you again. Gotta look down upon me, Jesus. Gotta help me make my stand. Lord, you've got to see me through another day. My body is aching, and my time is at hand. Now I know I won't make it any other way. Oh, I've seen fire and dancing rain. Sunny skies that I thought would never end. Lonely times when I could not find my friends. But I always knew that I would see you again.
walking my mind to an easy time, with my back turned to the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, you'll turn your head around. We waste hours of time thinking of things to come, round fine dreams and broken machines, and the young people ain't working on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire and dancing rain. Lonely times when I could not find my friend. Sunny skies that I thought would never end, but I always knew that I would see you again. I always knew that I would see you again. Always knew that I would see you again and again.
Rhode Island guitar made it really well. Oh,
I'm glad.
Listening to WGXC Acra, radio for open ears. I'm Alana, your host. This is There There on 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. We just heard Rahil by the composer Ramzi Aburduwan from his 2012 recording Reflections of Palestine. And before that, Richie Havens performing a cover of Fire and Rain back in 1981. That was at the all-night show with Chuck the Security Guard, a TV show out of Toronto, Canada. And before that, we heard U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo reading from her recent work at the Hammer Museum in L.A. Back in 2020. Last year, that is. Way back. It feels like it was a long time ago. I hope you're all holding up out there and have been enjoying the beautiful weather today. Here in the Hudson Valley, at any rate. It's been a beautiful day, and I'm grateful. We'll be on until 8 o'clock tonight when Tony Fallon takes over with the Irish Show every week, as he does. Before I get back to the sounds, I'm going to tell you a little bit about an event coming up this Wednesday night, WGXE's 10th anniversary. That's right. 10 years on FM. Well done. And still marching along. And the WGXE community will be celebrating at the Greenville Drive-In Outdoor Cinema in Greenville, New York. That's in Greene County. There may be a few tickets left. I'm not entirely sure. You can check that out at wavefarm.simpletix.com. wavefarm.simpletix.com. You can also get information at wgxc.org/drive-in. There's going to be a lineup of 10-minute DJ sets, 10-minute performances, amazing group of people, and all kinds of people from the WGXC airwaves will be there rubbing elbows or sitting in their cars listening to the show. And it will also be projected on the drive-in screen and broadcast on WGXC, of course. So check it out either in person or on the air. Coming up next, we have another reading. Arundhati Roy reading from her novel, The Ministry of Utmost Happiness.
And Arundhati, what will you be reading from?
I'm actually going to read from my novel, The Ministry of Utmost Happiness. So this is towards the end of the book, it's chapter 9, and it starts with a quote from Baldwin, which says, "And they would not believe me precisely because they would know that what I said was true." The chapter is called The Untimely Death of Miss Jabin I. Ever since she was old enough to insist, she had insisted on being called Miss Jibin. It was the only name she would answer to. Everyone had to call her that. Her parents, her grandparents, the neighbors too. She was a precocious devotee of the Miss fetish that gripped the Kashmir Valley in the early years of the insurrection. All of a sudden, fashionable young ladies, especially in the towns, insisted on being addressed as Miss. Miss Momin, Miss Ghazala, Miss Farhana. It was only one of the many fetishes of the times. In those blood-dimmed years, for reasons nobody fully understood, people became what can only be described as fetish-prone. Other than the Miss fetish, there was a nurse fetish, a PT instructor fetish, and a roller skating fetish. So in addition to checkposts, bunkers, weapons, grenades, landmines, cassipes, concertina wire, soldiers, insurgents, counterinsurgents, spies, special operatives, double agents, triple agents, and suitcases of cash from the agencies on both sides of the border, the valley was also awash with nurses, PT instructors, and roller skaters. And of course, misses. Among them, Miss Jibin, who didn't live long enough to become a nurse, nor even a roller skater. In the Mazar-e-Shahada, the martyr's graveyard where she was first buried, the cast iron signboard that arched over the main gate said in two languages, "We gave our todays for your tomorrows." It's corroded now, the green paint faded, the delicate calligraphy flecked with pinholes of light. Still there it is after all these years, silhouetted like a swatch of stiff lace against the sapphire sky and the snowy sawtoothed mountains. There it still is. Miss Jibin and her mother were buried along with 15 others, taking the toll of their massacre to 17. At the time of their funeral, the Mazar-e-Shahada was still fairly new, but was already getting crowded. However, the Intizamiya Committee, the organizing committee, had its ear to the ground from the very beginning of the insurrection and had a realistic idea of things to come. It planned the layout of the graves carefully, making ordered, efficient use of the available space. Everybody understood how important it was to bury martyrs' bodies in collective burial grounds and not leave them scattered in their thousands like bird feed up in the mountains or in the forests around the army camps and torture centers that had mushroomed across the valley. When the fighting began and the occupation tightened its grip, for ordinary people, the consolidation of their dead became in itself an act of defiance. In the Mazar-e-Shahada, on his wife's tombstone, Musa Yesvi wrote, "Arifa Yesvi, wife of Musa Yesvi." And below that, "Ab waha khak udhati hai khizan, phool hi phool jahan the pehle." Now dust blows on autumn's breeze where once were flowers, only flowers. Next to it, on Miss Jibin's tombstone, it said, "Miss Jibin, 2nd January 1992 to 22nd December 1995, beloved daughter of Arifa and Musa Yesu." And then right at the bottom, in very small letters, Musa asked the tombstone engraver to inscribe what many would consider an inappropriate epitaph for a martyr. He positioned it in a place where he knew that in winter it would be more or less hidden under the snow, and during the rest of the year, tall grass and wild narcissus would obscure it, more or less. And this is what he wrote. "Ak dalila wan, yet mans na kan balai as, na asu kuni junglas mans rozan." It's what Miss Jibin would say to him at night as she lay next to him on the carpet, resting her back on a frayed velvet bolster, washed, darned, and washed again, wearing her own peron, washed, darned, and washed again, tiny as a tea cozy, feroze blue with salmon pink paisleys embroidered around the neck and sleeves, and mimicking precisely her father's lying down posture, her left leg bent, her right ankle on her left knee, her very small fist in his very big one. Ach, the Leela one, tell me a story. And then she would begin the story herself, shouting it out into the somber curfew light, her raucous delight dancing out of the windows and rousing the neighborhood. Yet mans na kan balai asi, na as sukuni junglas mans rozan. There wasn't a witch and she didn't live in the jungle. Tell me a story and can we cut the crap about the witch and the jungle? Can you tell me a real story? Cold soldiers from a warm climate patrolling the icy highway that circled their neighborhood cocked their ears and uncocked the safety catches of their guns. Who's there? What's that sound? Stop or we'll shoot. They came from far away and did not know the words in Kashmiri for stop or shoot or who. They had guns, so they didn't need to. The youngest of them, S. Murgesan, barely adult, had never been so cold, had never seen snow, and was still enchanted by the shapes his breath made as it condensed in the frozen air. Look, he said on his first night patrol, two fingers to his lips, pulling on an imaginary cigarette, exhaling a plume of blue smoke. Free cigarette. The white smile in his dark face floated through the night and then faded, deflated by the bored disdain of his mate. Go ahead, they said to him, smoke the whole pack. Cigarettes don't taste so good once they've blown your head off. They did get to him eventually. The armored jeep he was riding in was blown up on the highway just outside Kupwara, and he and two other soldiers bled to death by the side of the road. In his village in Tamil Nadu, the Vanniyars, who were not untouchable, would not allow the body of S. Murugesan, who was, to be carried past their houses to the cremation ground. So the funeral procession took a circuitous route that skirted the village to the separate untouchables cremation ground next to the village dump. To commemorate S. Murgesan's valor, the army contributed towards building a cement statue of Sipoy S. Murgesan in his soldier's uniform with his rifle on his shoulder at the entrance to the village. Every now and then, his young widow would point it out to their baby, who was 6 months old when her father died. Appa, she'd say, waving at the statue. And the baby would smile, mimicking precisely her mother's wave, a fold of baby fat spilling over her baby wrist like a bracelet. Appa, 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 she'd say, smiling. Not everyone in the village was happy with the idea of having an untouchable man statue put up at the entrance, particularly not an untouchable who carried a weapon. They felt it would give out the wrong message, give people ideas. 3 weeks after the statue went up, the rifle on its shoulder went missing. Sipoy S. Murgesan's family tried to file a complaint, but the police refused to register a case, saying the rifle must have fallen off or simply disintegrated due to the use of substandard cement, a fairly common malpractice, and that nobody could be blamed. A month later, the statue's hands were cut off. Once again, the police refused to register a case, although this time they sniggered knowingly and did not even bother to offer a reason. 2 weeks after the amputation of its hands, the statue of S. Murugesan was beheaded. There were a few days of tension. People from nearby villages who belonged to the same caste as S. Murugesan organized a protest. They began a relay strike at the base of the statue. A local court said it would constitute a magisterial committee to look into the matter. In the meanwhile, it ordered a status quo. The hunger strike was discontinued. The magisterial committee was never constituted. In some countries, some soldiers died twice. The headless statue remained at the entrance of the village. though it no longer bore any likeness to the man it was supposed to commemorate, it turned out to be a more truthful emblem of the times than it would otherwise have been. S. Murgeson's baby continued to wave at him. Appa, appa, appa.
Thank you.
Nick Drake, Voice from the Mountain, from the 1986 release of his Fruit Tree box set. I'm Alana, your host. This is There There. You're listening to WGXC Radio for Open Ears. I'm on the fourth Sunday of every month from 7 to 8 p.m., bringing you the news sounds, old sounds, thoughts, reflections, jokes, It's a new story every month. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. We're on for just a little bit longer before 8 o'clock and Tony Fallon comes on. Before Nick Drake, we heard Harry Parch, Act 1, Treats with Death and with Life Despite Death, on a Japanese theme, Scene, a Shrine, Chorus of Shadows. That's from Delusion of the Fury from 1971, a good year, I will say, when good things were born. Before that, Arundhati Roy reading from The Ministry of Utmost Happiness, her book at the Brooklyn Book Festival in January of this year. So I think we're gonna wrap up with another reading, one more reading from the wonderful Patti Smith, reading from her book The Year of the Monkey recently on Instagram. And Nina Violet, after that, will bring us home with Run to the Stream from her 2011 album, We'll Be All Right. Thanks for listening and be well.
Oh, hello, everybody. Oops. So, this is New Adventures in Photo Booth, Part 3. And it's around midnight. And I'm going to read from Year of the Monkey. And why am I doing that? I don't know. I just felt like it. Just felt like it. It seemed as if I walked for miles, yet everything stayed the same. I was sure that I had covered a lot of ground, but I wasn't getting anywhere. I tried speeding up, then slowing down, figuring I'd collide with myself and break the loop, but no such luck. The long desert panorama kept readjusting itself until any new routine became a loop in itself. I pulled a stale bun wrapped in a napkin out of my napkin. I pulled a stale bun wrapped in a napkin out of my pocket. It was dusted in sugar and tasted faintly of oranges, like one of those Day of the Dead cakes. I got to thinking about the boys in the diner. Of course, that's on another page, but anyway, I was thinking about them. You'd have to read the book to know what the conversation was, but it's not really that important. I mean, not really that important to what I'm reading now. It's just, I mean, I could have edited it, but anyway, I was wondering if their conversation was mere coincidence and if my assessment that candy wrapper was a noun was actually correct. I also wondered if the mundanity of my train of thought was hindering my process, also my progress. Well, you know, I was walking. I know it's chilly. I mean, it's like ridiculous wearing a winter coat in my room, but it's a little chilly out. Also, I like to, you know, Jimmy Carter taught us in the 70s to keep our thermostat on 68, which I always do, but sometimes it gets a little chilly. I switched to a mental dart game, a revolving target of time-altering possibilities that I would play sometimes by myself and sometimes, oh, forget it. Just forget that part. Anyway, what it is, it's a mental dart game, and like you just throw it out and see where it lands. So I released a dart that lit all the way to Flanders at the close of the Middle Ages, prompting me to assault the air with new queries such as why the gilded phrase of the young virgin, you know, the phrase on the Ghent altarpiece, there's words that she says, but they're upside down. Like, why were they reading from right to left, but also downwards on the Annunciation panel of the Ghent altarpiece? Now, that's, you know, a reasonable question. Might it be that the painter was merely toying with us, or was the imperceptible balloon encasing her words upside down and backwards simply to accommodate the eye of the Holy Spirit, translucent and winged, positioned above her? I have a picture of that somewhere, but I'll finish this. This preoccupation gradually eclipsed any concerns of nouns and verbs or my whereabouts as I fluidly revisited the historical past. I saw the hand of the master painter closing the outer wings of the panels. I saw other hands reverently opening the same panels. Their wooden frames were dark from the deepening of time. I saw thieves carrying the panels away to a ship that sailed into treacherous seas. I saw the battered hole and the broken mask. The sky was blue without a single cloud, and I kept walking, drinking slowly, carefully measuring my water supply. I walked until I was where I wanted to be, before the dove and the maiden, the fat of the lamb, melting away. Thank you. Good night. Adventure shall continue.
Run to the stream and cast the shell off of your body. The whole world is the cold.